ยานัตมณิสังยัญญา
สิทธัตถังโยยา
เชตระเยปราวลัพยตัง
เชตระเยปราวลัพยตัง
ปรมัญญาตมานวาทาเ
ดปรมัญญาตมานวาทาเ
ดกถัมภรวิวัมภเรวิญญาณัตมนิสัมยุจยา
วิญญาณัตมนิสัมยุจยา
เชตระเยปวิลิพยตัง
เชตระเยปวิลิพยตัง
ปรมัญญาตมานวาทาเ
รปรมัญญาตมานวาทาเร
กถัมภรวิวัมภเร
กถัมภรวิวัมภเร
วิญญาณัตมนิสัมยุจยา
วิญญาณ
เชตระเยปวิลัพยตัง
เชตระเยปวิลัพยตัง
ปรมัญญาตมานวาทาเร
ปรมัญญาตมานวาทาเร
กถัมภรวิวัมภเร
กถัมภรวิวัมภเร
of his qualitative oneness as a living entity. with the supreme Brahman. Being freed from the blocked sky, you will have to rise to the spiritual sky. Purport. The living being, by his desire to lord it over the material world and declining to cooperate with the Supreme Lord, contacts the sum total of the material world, namely the Mahat-Tattva. And from the Mahat-Tattva, his false identity within the material world, intelligence, mind, and senses is developed. This covers his pure spiritual identity. By the yoga process, when his pure identity is realized in self-realization, one has to revert to the original position by amalgamating the five gross elements and the subtle elements, mind and intelligence, into the Mahat again. Thus, getting freed from the clutches of the Mahat-Tattva, he has to merge into the existence of the Supersoul. In other words, he has to realize that qualitatively he is non-different from the Supersoul, and thus he transcends the material sky by his pure, identical intelligence, and thus becomes engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. This is the highest perfection of development of spiritual identity, which is obtained by Dhritarashtra, by the grace of Vidura and the Lord. The Lord's mercy was bestowed upon him by his personal contact with Vidura, and when he was actually practicing the instructions of Vidura, the Lord helped him to attain the highest perfectional stage. A pure devotee of the Lord does not live on any planet of the material sky, nor does he feel any contact with material elements. His so-called material body does not exist, being surcharged with the spiritual current of the Lord's identical interest. And thus he is permanently free from all contaminations of the sum total of the Mahat-Tattva. He is always in the spiritual sky, which he attains by being transcendental to the sevenfold material coverings, by the effect of his devotional service. The conditioned souls are within the coverings, whereas the liberated soul is far beyond the covering. So Narad Muni is describing here the yoga process by how Dhritarashtra will become freed from this material contamination. So this process, this is the mechanical process that's being explained here through yoga. But the principles are the same for bhakti. It means one has to become free from material contamination. So the process is the same. It's very important to note this, that there's, Krishna says there's only one path. There isn't another path, there's not a second path. But depending upon what elements on the path you use, you will call it by a different method. You'll call it yoga, or you'll call it bhakti. There's different forms. Even your karma and jnana are the same path, but they're only taking portions of the path. They're not going all the whole distance that the path covers. So this is important. If this is understood, life becomes very simple. Difficulty comes when we make differences. Of course, it's said that there's two people who are happy in the material world, the fool and the Paramahamsa. So the fool makes no distinction. Whatever they like to do, they do. They're happy. So they don't use their intelligence. There's no discrimination. So life is very simple for them. Enjoy. That's all. So it's not complicated. But if you use your intelligence, you start to see that there are differences. There's variety in the material world. And this variety causes pleasure and pain. This is where it becomes complicated. Now, through this mechanical process, or through contemplation, through using the process of jnana, then one can amalgamate this whole material existence back into the existence of the Lord. Then again things become very simple, because there's only the Lord and his devotees in devotional service. So again, the Paramahamsa is happy. You see? So in between we're unhappy. So then the process is, now naturally we don't want to become a fool. We don't want to say, okay, you know, I've enough of this, just go out there and enjoy. Because we've already done that. One has to remember, if one has taken up devotional service, that's because he's developed the sukriti to do that. And you only get that sukriti when you've been through everything. Someone takes up devotional service when he actually understands whatever is to be done has been done. And there's nothing more to do. There's nothing to gain. So one takes it up. At least in the beginning, one can always forget later. And think, well, it wasn't so bad, right? Like that. You know, it's good for 10 years. Like that. So then, the one has come into Krishna consciousness because of this. So it's not actually possible to go back. One knows too much, right? One can't get away with it. You know, one knows one's not the body. One knows the other person's not the body. You know that they're trying to be the controller and enjoyer. You know that's what you're trying to do. You know that there's everything's fleeting. So one can try, but one will notice no satisfaction. There may be happiness, but no satisfaction. So it's happy for a moment, then no satisfaction. So that won't work. So the only progressive thing to do is move forward. So intelligence is working. Discrimination is there. Now take the fields that you use your discrimination in and apply them to the devotional process. Doesn't matter what the field is, because every field works on the same principles. Whether you're talking prajalpa, whether you're cooking, whether you're doing something mechanical, you're dealing with your computer, you're dealing with some art form, you're dealing with some process of knowledge, it's all functioning on the same principles. It's not working on something different, because it's Krishna's path. You want to see Krishna in the form of food, then he's there. But you have to follow the path to work. Right? That's how it functions. You can't take the potato, put it on the counter, put the stove on top of the potato, light the stove, and expect anything to happen. Right? You have to put the stove first, then light the fire, and put the potato somehow or another contacting the fire. Right? Either directly or through a pot, or through air, or through water. Right? Then it will work. That's Krishna's path. So if this is understood, it doesn't matter where you start. That's the beauty of devotional service. Within the material world, there's a hierarchy. But on the transcendental platform, there's not. Right? It's not a hierarchy. It's different. Here, it's a hierarchy. Because there is the sense of good and bad, right and wrong. Why? Right and wrong, good, bad, gives you profit. Know this. The bottom line is, this is good, that is bad, is profit. Never for a moment think there's something more glorious to it than that. If you do, then yes, you will be happy, because you'll be a fool. There isn't anything more. The reason something's good, you'll get profit. The reason something's bad is you'll get lost on the material platform. There is not another reason for it. Maybe the gain or loss is on the intellectual platform, the emotional, the sensual, economics, power, beauty, fame, renunciation. But it's all in terms of gain and loss. So, in the process of knowing Brahman, knowing the Supreme, there are four stages. The first three deal with this discriminatory power. If you don't use your brain, then of course, you're a muda, so it doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. But if you have intelligence to use it, then it falls into these four categories. Three uses intelligence. The fourth is what is mentioned here. So here is these verses here that are describing all four of these paths, the two main categories. The first is take your area of interest and influence and learn how does that function according to the God-given laws and perform it that way. Then you'll get the best profit and loss, and it will be the most progressive. It will fit in with all situations. You will feel the most balanced, the most normal, the most satisfied. So just as a basic person, everything, your intelligence, your emotions, your senses, your social interaction, your economics, whatever it is that's important for you, it will work as good as it's going to work. And because you've connected it to the Lord, you know, basically that, you know, you're using the Shastra. Shastra says I should do this. Then it's progressive. That's the first stage. One may think, no, we are beyond this. But think about it. If you say, why is it good? Why should I go to Mangalarti? Why is it good? Why should I chant? Why should I be nice? Why should I be truthful? Why should I eat properly? Right? What is your reason behind it? It's something that you've heard from somebody else. Right? That's the consideration. I've read it in Shastra. I've heard it from some authority, either, you know, Vedic or non-Vedic, or a friend. If you really think about it, that's the real reason. Generally. So that's the basic stage, basic platform. The second stage is then one considers the metaphysics of what is going on, how it's working, what mechanically happens. If I go to Mangalarti, what mechanically happens that I do get benefit? I go, the mind is purified, I see the Lord, the images of the Lord, the samskar, hearing the holy name. You understand technically what is going on, why I should do it. The first one is using intelligence, but sentiment is a lot to do with it, because you're doing it because you want to do it. You know, it's your area of interest. Right? I'm sitting in the park talking with friends, watching the kids, because that's what I want to do. Right? So fine, do that. But how should you sit in the park? How should you talk? What should you talk about? How you'll deal with the kids? What does Scripture say about that? You're doing that, you're on the first stage. Second stage is you understand mechanically how that works. Okay, if I deal with the kid like this, then I'll get this reaction. So if I get that reaction, then you can put them in the direction they'll identify with me. They identify with me, they'll identify with my values. They identify my values, they'll follow my values. Therefore, I have a platform for preaching to them my values. They don't identify with me, there's not a chance that they're going to follow anything I do other than the desire to control and enjoy the material energy. That they'll get, don't worry. Guaranteed, they will get that from you. But the rest of it, that you have to know what you're doing. Or you have to have grown up in something that it was very nice, and you just by habit, you do it, and so then it happens. You know, like the Hindus, or you know, somebody has a tradition. You know, I'm sitting. How do I sit? Why should I sit that way? Why should I shouldn't sit that way? What is the benefit? I sit this way, it's good for the back, it's good for this, that. The energies are moving, flowing properly. Therefore, the mind is peaceful. Mind is peaceful, then we don't project energies that we shouldn't be projecting, either in the way of attracting people or in the way of disturbing people. You know, like that. Less than the cultural things. If you sit like this, then it gives this mood, so then people think this. I sit that way, it projects another mood, and people think like that. So then you know what you're doing. You have the knowledge behind it. This gives you liberation. This platform. The other platform, you'll do nice here. It'll go great here. But there's a chance to take birth again and again and again to perfect the material expertise. Right? Nowadays, everyone wants to be expert professional. So, yes, but if you don't use knowledge behind it, yes, you will be the big professional, and each life it will get better. I think Prabhupada mentioned about, I'd heard about Ravi Shankar, but it may have been generic, that he had been a musician for 1,000 lifetimes. That's why he was so good. Right? How do you get these people? 3 years old, Nikhil Banerjee. He just goes in, picks up his father's sitar, and starts to play it. Father says, you can't play. You're 3 years old. Put it down. This is not a toy. Anytime the father leaves the room, he goes in, picks up the instrument, starts to play it. Father says, you can't play it. Father leaves the house one day. The boy goes in, puts something against the door, you know. They always think that'll keep everybody out. And he's there playing with the instrument again. Father comes home, finds him playing. So then he says, okay, you want to play sitar, huh? Okay, we're going to play sitar. So he sat him down, and hours and hours and hours a day, he has to practice, 3 years old. He does it. Where does that come from? That didn't just come from, just out of the air. You know, it wasn't that, you know, you went down and bought a box of Cracker Jacks, and inside was a coupon for, you're the happy winner of the ability to play sitar, honey ball. No, it didn't work like that. It coming from previous lives. So, yes, you want to become professional, you want to become expert, no problem. It's just birth after birth after birth, right? You know, it's just like the Christians, born again and again and again. So that's the process. So if you want to get out of the material world by your professionalism, then you have to understand the knowledge by which it functions. And then by performing that in knowledge with detachment, you're liberated. You won't go back to Godhead, but you're liberated. Right? It's done without knowledge or minimal knowledge and attachment. It keeps you here. It's done with knowledge and without attachment, you get out. Then the third level is then you see actually who we are, the soul, God, and the material energy, and you understand their relationship, how they function. This is called sambandha jnana. You apply that into your field of expertise. Then you develop devotion. Devotion starts there. Right? It means you have to have that knowledge. But in all these three, there's the discrimination between one thing and another, and this is better than that. Now the prophet is going back to Godhead. Right? So then in that way, then the desire for good and bad or profit and loss is not a problem. The others, it's also not a problem because it's based on scripture. So therefore, socially it works. But this level, then devotionally it works. Then the fourth level is what's mentioned here, of this pure, identical intelligence. Being with knowledge of his qualitative oneness as a living entity of the Supreme Brahman, being freed from the blocked sky, that's the material, he will have to rise to the spiritual sky. So therefore, now he has seen that there's a non-difference. He and the Lord are non-different qualitatively, and the material energy is his energy, it has nothing to do with him. So therefore, then he's freed, it doesn't block him anymore. So he sees the qualitative oneness. That's the fourth stage. So on that level, then, the reason that you're doing it is that it pleases Krishna. In reality. The third stage, you know that you do this, it makes Krishna happy. But generally one tends to look at the technicalities. Because on that third stage, you're still performing the activities of the second. Does that make sense? In other words, the first stage is you're doing your duties perfectly with knowledge how to do them. The second one is you're doing those duties with metaphysical knowledge, actually how they work and how it functions within the material energy and actually gets you the profit you want. The third stage is you understand its connection with the Supreme Lord and how by doing this you'll get freed from the material energy and get the Supreme Lord. The fourth stage is you don't even worry about the material energy, you only worry about pleasing the Lord. That's the stage Prabhupada talks about here. A pure devotee of the Lord does not live on any planet in the material sky, nor does he feel any contact with material elements. His so-called material body does not exist, being surcharged with the spiritual current of the Lord's identical interests. Here, identical is very interesting. This is all Prabhupada's English. He says his pure identical intelligence. One is his identity. Now here he says Dhritarashtra will have to amalgamate his pure identity with intelligence and then merge in the Supreme Being. So in other words, his pure identity has soul, he'll have to merge that with the intelligence. And that intelligence then will take him to the Supreme Lord. Because here, his identity is intelligent Sankarshan. So as Sankarshan, then he's thinking, I am this body, or I'm thinking I'm this or that, or of the material quality. And then he thinks, I am soul. So then that will take one out, because Sankarshan is the cause of material creation. He is the one through which we remove false identity. Sadashiva is how we've gotten this false identity. That's mechanically how we get it. We already have it inherently by thinking that I'm the controller and enjoyer. That puts us in Mahat, the material energy. Right? Prabhupada mentions that everyone... The living entity, by his desire to lord it over the material world and declining to cooperate with the Supreme Lord. In other words, he wants to be the controller and not be enjoyed by the Supreme Lord. He wants to be enjoyed. Contacts the sum total of the material world, namely Mahat. And from the Mahat, his false identity with the material world, intelligence, mind, and senses is developed. So his false identity with the material world, here it may also be meaning, here, his false identity by this, that he's meaning of the Vasudeva principle. Because there's four kinds of false ego. That from Vasudeva, then you think, I am the controller and enjoyer. It's pure in that it doesn't have any specific material direction. But the consciousness is contaminated. You understand? In other words, you don't have a specific material body that is engrossed in endeavoring to fulfill certain karmic needs. Does that make sense? Like that. But the desire to be controller and enjoyer is there. So this is then Mahat. So since he's talked about it getting out, then it would probably be, this would be the later, the, means the upper development of this. So then one could understand this to be the pure identity to be connected with this Vasudeva aspect of false ego. Then he mentions intelligence, that's Prajumna, because that's the senses. Intelligence and the senses come from the mode of passion. So therefore we think I'm intelligence, we use the senses, we use the intelligence to guide the senses. What will be the best option I could get out of this situation to control and enjoy? Mind is Aniruddha, that is where one will enjoy. Like that. False identity, that's Sankarshan here. Then he's just taking it back here. False identity, then I guess would be Sankarshan. Because intelligence and senses go together as Prajumna, mind is Aniruddha. So then the living being, by his desiring to lord it over the material world and declining to cooperate with the Lord, contacts the sum total material world. So there, that would be the Vasudeva, called Mahat Tattva. So you have the whole thing is called Mahat Tattva, the whole material manifestation, and the material universe, when the Lord glances over it, and the false ego, Sambhu, along with the living entities in time, enters it, then the Pradhan becomes surcharged and becomes Mahat. Then it becomes also Mahat Tattva. So it is the smaller form of the bigger. The bigger is, the Lord is there, Shankarshan is already in as Karana Dakshay Vishnu. The living entities have come into it by their desire. And so, therefore, it is also Mahat Tattva, but on the platform of Karana Dakshay Vishnu. Does this make some sense? Then you have the next level of that, where Mahavishnu, then, but this is basically unmanifest for the jivas. The jivas are merged into the Lord. Then he creates the universes through his breathing. They float on the waters of the Karnanadak ocean. Then he glances at them, and in the glance, which is Shambhu Sadashiva, which is a form of Sankarshan, then the jivas go along with the time element. So that's false ego, false identity with that. Then the entrance. So that is then also that stage is the Mahat. Mahat Tattva. So that is the Vasudev platform. So that's why it has both. Because living entities are in that and they identify with it. But when that identity becomes manifest, that's Shankarshan. When it's unmanifest, it's simply in the stage of I am controller, enjoyer, that's Vasudev. Does that make sense? Because that's the basis of pastimes. Your identity can change from day to day. Today you can think, yeah, I'm a great this, and then you can find out you're not. You know? Then, so that identity may change. But the fundamental identity that I'm controller and enjoyer, that remains. So all your pastimes, your activities, based on the Vasudev. The specific one you're in now, that's based on Sankarshan. What you're attracted to, that's Prajumna. And what you want to get out of it, that's Aniruddha. So in any case, you can't get away from the Lord. So when we understand the mechanics of all this, then that's that third stage. Then when you go beyond that, you're only interested in pleasing the Lord. It's the interaction with the Lord. All this doesn't matter, because this is only the process to get out. Does that make sense? In other words, till you're out, then one will see difference. So you're simultaneously cultivating that there's non-difference between myself and the Lord, and that identical intelligence, meaning one is identical, meaning it can mean that you have to give up the identical intelligence of identifying as the controller and enjoyer, or even grosser as I am this body. But we have to get it to the pure identical intelligence means that the identity is that I am servant of the Lord and that there's the non-difference of interaction with the Lord. So therefore, identical means your mood and the Lord's mood is identical. Right? Otherwise, then you identify as the enjoyer. Controller and enjoyer. So this is, in other words, you could not explain this in normal English. If you did, you'd lose something. In one sentence, he's explained this. You'd have to take a paragraph and explain this in colloquial English. Therefore, one should appreciate the actual superiority of Prabhupada's English over the modern. Though, I beg the forgiveness of any, you know, grammarians and editors in the room who may or may not agree with me, but when push comes to shove, Prabhupada knows language better than anyone on the planet. So here, this is an example of his expertise in saying exactly what he wants to say. And the same word, the identical intelligence, or identity with intelligence, has all these meanings. The transcendental, where it's non-different from the Lord, that what you want is what the Lord wants, to where you separate yourself from the Lord, that I am the controller and enjoyer, which is separate, to where that manifests that I am this particular kind of controller and this particular kind of enjoyer. This is Vedic language. The one word, there is seamless between all the platforms. Modern language doesn't do this. Because in the pursuit of saying exactly what they want to say, that's if they know what they want to say, then they have to separate it from everything else. While here, the one word moves, just like it's a confusion, Mahat Tattva. Mahat Tattva recurs to the material energy in total, and it refers to the material energy in the universe once the living entities are injected. It means both, because they're both non-different. Just one is the conceptual stage, and the other is the conceptual that is about to be manifest. then when it manifests, we call that creation. Right? Then that still is the blueprint. Then when Brahma then makes the living entities to fit Krishna's blueprint, that is Visarga, that is the secondary creation. Then it's hit the ground. So the yoga process is therefore for reversing this. So the practical thing for the devotees then is, one is that the key is the identity. That is the point through which everything else is hanging. That is the path. Everything else is how you identify. And then connecting those identities to Krishna. Right? So those identities, we don't necessarily have to see them as ourselves, but we can see them as the situation we're in. And even in that, you have different levels to function within. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, you can separate yourself from it, the identity, and not work with it if you're on the Paramahamsa platform, or work with it on the metaphysical platform. Or you can see it that the reason you're dealing with it is simply as pastime for Krishna. So you can still apply the fourth level of realization to the lower ones and function within it. So that's how the Uttamadhikari functions as a madhyama. They don't see the material energy, they just know that this is this kind of manifestation of Krishna's energy, and in this manifestation, it can be used like this to please Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So the devotee is manifest in a male or female body. So they know they're not that body, but they know that that situation of the male or female principle can be used like this to please Krishna. Because Krishna has given the directions on how that function. What is the culture of the feminine body or the masculine body and their interaction? So you just do that to please Krishna. So there is no material energy for them. Because if they were the spiritual world, they would act like that. So if the material world, they'll act the same. Because that is the culture of that. So culture is to please Krishna. The tattva is the knowledge. Tattva is for the first three levels. Rasa is the fourth level. But that rasa manifests in the first three levels through shastra, guru sadhana shastra. Does that make some sense? So how the masculine body interacts with another male, with a female, with older, with a younger, you know, in a formal situation, an informal situation. All these things, it's just, this is the manifestation of the Lord's material energy at this time, and you use it in Krishna's service according to the direction of Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra and tradition, then what's the problem? You don't identify with me, do it. But you say, oh, I'm not this body, so I don't do that. That person is 101% identifying with their body. Like that. I make this point very strong. Those who say, we're not the body, we don't have to follow this, that person is the most convinced they're the body. They just don't want to admit it. Otherwise, why are they always talking about it? If it didn't matter, why would you talk about it? Right? I mean, does it bother you that over behind this building, then they're using century cement to build the bricks over there instead of ACC cement? You ever think about it? You ever worry about what brick they're using? What company? No. But someone who their field is construction, these are exact things they're going to look at. They're going to go by, oh, that's dark cement, so that must be century rather than this one. And that brick, what kind of brick it is pretty good, this and that. Oh, they're using, you know, first class brick or from this view. That's what they'll think. You understand? So if someone's always talking about that, that means that's what they identify with. The actual liberated person has no need. Therefore, they're relaxed and comfortable with their position, whatever it is. Therefore, they're nice people and anyone can get along with them. Right? Prabhupada's coming down from the spiritual world. He's not that body. but he's comfortable in using that form to serve Krishna. Therefore, he's the most comfortable person you can be around because he's comfortable with it. I'm not this, but I'm using it. I'm not this microphone, but I know how a microphone works, so I use it to advantage. If I identify with the microphone, how I'll use it. I'm this mic, I can't do it. No, don't touch it, don't get close, don't touch it. Is it turned on? No, look at it. I can't function with it. So that's the principle. So this is how, this is the key, how they're working. It sounds good, okay, yoga, this, that. But this is how you get out of the material world. This is the metaphysics of it. This is how it works. It's being explained to yoga because yoga goes through the most mechanical system. So this aspect of the metaphysics of devotional life is explained generally through karma, I mean jnana and yoga, because that's all they do. But it's the same path, we're on the same path. In bhakti, the emphasis is on pleasing the Lord. And so it's the mood of the heart. That's what gets you out. The desire to please, the desire to serve. But as long as the intelligence is absorbed in things other than that, then we use these mechanical processes. Does that make some sense? You know, we're going to cook. We don't know how to cook. We're going to look in a recipe book. We're not just going to go in and just do it. You know, you may, but whether it's edible or not is another thing. You know, gone into so many houses of devotees, right? You know, you go in when there's no children, there's just Prabhupada's books there. You go in after they have children, there's about 5 million books on babies and breastfeeding and this and that. And you want to know. So you're going to get the knowledge somewhere. So since we're getting it, connected to Krishna. We may say, oh, we don't bother with this. You're already bothering with something. And then the question is, how is that that you're bothering with connected to Krishna? And if you say, oh, we don't care, then this means you are running away from your own false identity. You're running away, you don't want to use your intellect because you don't want to think about it, because you don't want to be depressed. Or you don't want to have to work. You don't want to have to think, oh, maybe there's something more. I'm fine. I'm okay, you're okay, everything's okay. But is it okay? It may be. But is all your needs and desires, have you actually connected them to Krishna? So that's the method. That puts you on the third platform of self-realization. Right? And then if you're cultivating simultaneously that devotion to Krishna, and that understanding that pleasing the Lord is the ultimate goal, then you're already cultivating the fourth platform. And so then once transition from the third to the fourth happens naturally. You don't have to use the yoga system to mechanically push it across. Right? Does that make sense? So the mechanics are there. The senses are engaged in the Lord's service. That means the intelligence has to be engaged. If you're not engaging the intelligence, the senses are not going to be well engaged. They may be, but you're thinking they're engaged today, but not tomorrow. Mano makes the point that by controlling the senses, or by engaging the senses, you're not going to give up the desire for the senses, for sense gratification. You just say, okay, I'm not going to do anything with the senses, it won't get rid of your desire. Or engaging them in a sense, it won't get rid. The only thing that will get rid of it is knowledge. Because the knowledge is the other side of the senses. The senses function by knowledge. Does that make sense? Do you understand how that works? Like that. Because you have to discriminate for sense gratification. I have to be able to tell the difference between the food on the plate and the plate itself. If I can't, then the plate goes in my mouth. Right? Kids have no discrimination. Everything goes in the mouth. But after it goes in the mouth, they discriminate. Okay, this one was nice, this one wasn't so nice. So then intelligence is used. So when intelligence is used in connection with the Lord, in in application of the senses, whether you're engaging them or controlling them, that works. That removes desire. So that's Pajumna. That's that platform. We identify as the Lord's servant, and our business is to please. Therefore, whatever is our material situation, how to engage that in Krishna's service, it doesn't matter what it is. Right? Gopis are women, Krishna doesn't mind. Cowherd boys are a bunch of kids, he doesn't mind. Cows are cows, he doesn't mind. So it doesn't matter what your identity is, if it's connected to Krishna, Krishna's happy. So that's Sankarshana. Right? And Aniruddha, the mind, what is your goal? Why do you want to be happy? Right? How will this please Krishna? Is this your happiness connected to Krishna? You'll be happy, but is Krishna happy also? Right? So whatever you do should be making Krishna happy. You'll be happy automatically. Then that's done. Adiruddha aspect. And then the final, is am I the controller and enjoyer? You look at it, whatever you're doing, why are you doing it? Especially anything major. Look at it. Why are you doing it? What is there an element of control there? Is there an element of enjoyment there? And if so, is it being connected to Krishna? Otherwise it won't be purified. The problem is not that you got it. That's a given. If you're in the material world, unless you're an acharya, then we have it. So now it's just a question of, do you want to follow the process to dissolve it, or you want to ignore it and just have it remain? So you want to control, fine. But then follow the path of control that Krishna gives and do it to please Him and do it with knowledge. Right? Because that is the path. That's what Gita is explaining. That's why it's the ABCs of spiritual life. Perform your duty because you're going to do a duty anyway. With knowledge, then that will free you from material energy. Thinking of Krishna, that will bring you to Him. To please Him, in devotion, that will bring you to that fourth stage. Perform your duty, that's the first stage. In knowledge, that's the second stage. Thinking of Him, that brings you to the third stage. In devotion, takes you to the fourth stage. So that's the essence of knowing that those are the four stages of knowing Brahman. Right? This is explained in Vishnu Purana. So the Gita is giving the basics on how each of those four function and how you can connect them to the Lord. Does that make sense? Okay. So then, here, just like, let's say, giving a charity or feeding guests is explained in the Dharma Shastras for Grihasthas. Because they have the greatest facility and the most opportunity for doing it. So they would be the best example to explain it. But everybody else is also taking care of guests and giving in charity. Does that make sense? But it'll be less. Just like administration, everybody's doing management. Right? But its most full manifestation is in Kshatriyas. So therefore, administration is explained through them. Right? Renunciation. That's most is there in Vanaprastha Sannyas. So therefore it's explained through them. Everybody else is renounced. Or study, it's most fully manifest in the Brahmacharya, the student. But everybody else is studying. So the same way as this metaphysics of mechanically taking you from the gross material identity up to the transcendental platform, then it's the most detailedly defined in yoga. That's why you'll constantly see that this process is shown. Even when Yudhishthira Maharaj goes, it gets more detailed than this, because now this is right in the first canto, so just the concept is there. Later you'll show how you fold each one of them up. Because they each come from the other. You just fold it up, fold it up, fold it up, till you get into the Mahatattva. Then in Mahatattva you just leave the false identity, and I'm servant of Krishna, you're out. So anybody can use that today. It works. But we don't have to use all the pranayama and all these other things. You're simply breathing means it's always absorbed Krishna, you're always chanting. So always chanting, just fold it up if you want to go to that. So it works. So question of one man. So he's asking about Brahman, if in between these two, and understanding Brahman, is there some other level of Maya? So here when we describe Brahman, we're meaning Krishna and his energies, because that's the actual. Just to get us to make a distinction, because we're so much caught up in what's good and bad, then we say material world bad, spiritual world good. You know, soul good, material world bad. You know, soul, material world bad, soul, spiritual world good. So then we tend to see Brahman generally as just the space in between the spiritual and the material. So that's the definition for when you're dealing with it by space. Because we're conditioned, then we see everything according to time and space. So that's what we're saying. The first three levels of self-realization deals with time and space. Because tattva is the main element there. Practical tattva in the first one, metaphysical in the second one, and the spiritual in the third. But the fourth one doesn't deal with time and space, because there's no difference, it's non-different. But the mood is non-different in rasa, not in tattva. Tattva in that is Brahman. Brahman means Krishna. And so everything that expands from him is Brahman. But even within Brahman, there is higher and lower forms for our understanding. Right? So therefore, material energy is inferior Brahman, but it's still Krishna's energy. Right? The soul is superior to that. Right? And Krishna is superior to everyone. So there's different elements of Brahman. So you have the Supreme Lord is Brahman. So you have, you know, you have, and then you have internal Brahman, external Brahman, and marginal Brahman. So these are all the different platforms. So there's always between one Brahman and another, there's always a sunbeam, there's always a junction. So between the Mahatattva and the spiritual world is the Brahma Jyoti, you know, or between us and the material energy, then there's all the false egos, you know, like that. That is how we interact, the interface. But you give it up, like here, Prabhupada's saying the pure devotee doesn't see those. So they don't differentiate between the material Brahman and spiritual Brahman, because it's all Krishna. And whatever it is used in Krishna's service. So just like milk you use one way in Krishna's service, and a peacock fan you use in a different way in Krishna's service. It's all Brahman. So in the same way as material energy, this functions slightly different than the internal potency. But in any case, it's engaged in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? So, therefore, then one understands Brahman according to one's platform of consciousness or realization. Yeah, so then it moves there. So, one sees one's work. Like you see, work is worship. You know, if it works, it's God. God is in the detail. These are all the level of realization of those who the practical application and getting a result is their platform of consciousness, which is the bulk of people, and that's only the better of them. Because those people manage the world. Everybody else that isn't even that conscious. Right? They don't even put it together that if it's practical, it works, it does. A few people do. Like that. Most people don't. They just go along with whatever's happening. Whatever socially the fuck they do. So those people that understand that, they're on that higher platform. So all you have to do is convert that what you're doing is what's given by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And you do that well, make it practical, get the result. Then that's the first level, because then you're seeing the Lord through activity, through karma. The second level, you're seeing you have the knowledge of how it functions, technically, how it connects you, the metaphysics of it. So then that then brings you to the platform beyond. Then the third one, you understand all the connections, everything like this, and how to get it up, that's the platform yoga. Right? Then the fourth one, that's bhakti. But all of those stages, if they're done for the purpose of bhakti, are considered non-different. So therefore it's karma yoga, jnana yoga, jnana yoga. They get you out that way. But if you don't, you don't see the bhakti element, then it will be called karma. It will be called jnana, it will be called yoga. So for us, it's bhakti. So we're simultaneously developing all these platforms at once. Because bhakti is the top one, so therefore it filters down into everything else that we're doing. So when you're doing the one, you have to have a little bit of the next platform anyway. There's no such thing as just only in here. But what's prominent? You know, just like you have knowledge of the senses. So if the attachment is more prominent than the detachment, the senses are engaged with knowledge. If the detachment is more prominent than attachment, then the senses are controlled with knowledge. So in both cases, one will get the reason, one will become free from desire. So whatever is prominent, that's what's given. So even though one is performing the activity, one has to have a little connection of the knowledge and one's relationship, and that it pleases Krishna. But the prominent thing will be on doing your work nicely. Or someone else is on contemplating how it all works, and the modes of nature, and you know, the different aspects of, you know, the technicalities of the devotional process. Third stage is you understand the break of the whole tattva and everything, the sambandha vidaya prayoja, and how that all functions, all in connection with Krishna. So you have to have some of that anyway to perform your devotional service. And you have to know that I'm doing this to please Krishna. You may forget about it, and now and again you remember it, but it still is there to some degree. Otherwise you wouldn't take up the devotional process. Does that make sense? So all of these stages are Brahman. It's just a matter of when you cross from conditioned to constitutional. So that point happens between the third and the fourth. So then, your question is tattva means that something, it's an eternal knowledge. So material energy, then, is it tattva because it's temporary? So if it's engaged in the Lord's service, then it'll be tattva because it's eternal. Both. For us, it becomes that when we understand it. Because if you don't understand it and engage it, it's not tattva because you're not interested. It's something to enjoy. So for us, practically, it becomes tattva when we engage it. But it is Krishna's energy, so it eternally is his energy, and it always functions as his energy to do his work. So therefore, she, even despite us understanding if she is or not, is tattva. Yeah, so she's just a Gahiraga. Shakti, Bhagavata. But she only becomes Tattva in, practically for us when we start to contemplate and see that she belongs to Krishna, and so that she's engaged in Krishna service. Otherwise, yeah. Otherwise, it's just the vines. Sorry, we'll get to this. Okay, two more questions and then we'll stop. Yoga for health and all that. Yoga is specific. It means hatha yoga. Yoga means connecting with the Supreme. To do that through the mechanical process, the body has to be able to hold a yogic posture without moving, so that one can control the breath, stop the breath, control the senses, pull them completely in, focus on the Lord, and come to the platform of samadhi. So without hatha yoga, the rest of the yoga won't happen. But the hatha yoga, its function in the whole process is to create perfect health. Right? So it can be used as a tool for health. But know it that that's all the more you're going to get from it. You know, that you sit there and because you're holding the things and you're following right and you're meditating, the mind becomes peaceful. Then don't take it that that is a spiritual experience. That's simply the mode of goodness somehow or another leaking in because you followed a mechanical process that allowed it to. So never think that you're doing yogasans is spiritual. If you're doing it for health to please Krishna, then the desire to do it to please Krishna, that's spiritual. And in that way, then you can say the asanas themselves are indirectly connected, but they themselves aren't directly bhakti. That you're doing it to please Krishna so you have the health to do nicely, that is devotion. Does that make sense? Can you attain the same health without? See, health comes when there's peace and satisfaction. So if you can, through, be satisfied with the situation you're in and engage in Krishna service, then yes, how good the health will be, you'll get. You know, like that. But in the process of doing that, then if you do some asanas, it's not a bad thing. You just don't overdo it. Don't make that your life. You know, unless you want to, you know, open a yoga studio and make some money to preach, then you can do that. You know, but don't overdo it, because the point is so what? Your health is great. Yes, you know, he died and he's got a fabulous corpse. I mean, you know, he's got such a flexible backbone. You know, I mean, just look at it. You know, so great. But the point is it's how much is necessary to keep the body and soul together to do your service. You need more health, you use it more. You need less health, you use it less. In other words, you shouldn't have less health than is required to do your service. So if yoga will help, great. If it doesn't help, don't bother. You know? But don't get into a yogi's mentality. Because you'll only get the perfection of the yoga mentality and samadhi. Before that, you won't get it. And always remember, samadhi is after you've stopped the breathing process completely. It means you don't breathe. Like that. Then you can get to samadhi. Otherwise, don't be an illusion that you're going to get something spiritual. You know, it's like eating. You eat something healthy, health is good. But it's offered to Krishna. So therefore, whatever you do, do it as an offering to Krishna. Okay? Yeah. Last question. On Jiva Tattva. Is the concept of Jiva pertaining to the material world? Then once we go back to the spiritual world, then do we become Shakti-tattva? See, this is what's meant by the identity, the identical purpose that is there. You know, here, pure identity, or pure identical intelligence, is that there is a non-difference because of that. Because you're interacting with Krishna. Krishna is something else. Prabhupada says Krishna is beyond spiritual. Krishna is not spiritual, he's something else. He's in his own category. Spiritual is his energies, his internal potency. He's something different. But you don't make that distinction there, but he's eternally the Shakti Man. But it's not different. Just like Krishna doesn't differentiate between the Sandini, Kladini, and Sandini potencies. But they are different. But in rasa, there's no need to make that. So in the same way, the jiva will be eternally different. But there's no need because the identity is the same. That is why it's so perfect and it's so important to understand and use the analogy of absolute as iron and fire. Because that's us. Right? Internal potency is fire. So you don't have to use this example. But this example applies to the jiva eternally. Is that the jiva is jiva tattva. But because they're in the fire of the internal potency, they're as good as the internal potency. Then no one makes any distinction. So it doesn't matter like that. So that we differentiate, that is there, it's part of the process of spiritual understanding. It's for the first three levels of understanding that discrimination must be there. Knowledge must be used. So it's concepts that are used to get out of the material world. Just like Brahman and Paramatma, realization, they're only used in the material world. The spiritual world doesn't use them. Those are material concepts. You know, because they don't apply in the spiritual world. So in the same way as all these things are there, and we use them, we discuss Praplatma, Brahman, Paramatma, you know, because they're real, but they're real for us getting to that platform. Otherwise, Paramatma is simply that Lord that you wouldn't interact with in past times. He just comes with you because you're not interacting with him. So he comes as an observer. And he expands into everything, so what you are interacting with anyway is him, but we don't know it. And everything is Brahman, but we don't know it. Because Brahman is Krishna, but we're thinking we're Krishna, so therefore we don't see anything as Brahman. To see everything as Brahman means you have to understand I'm not. Because the Mayavadis actually don't attain the Brahman platform. Brahmavadis do it because they don't see any difference. They don't see there's a difference, it's just Brahman. So to them it doesn't matter. There's variety, no variety. It doesn't matter. It's Brahman. Maya bodies is no variety. That's why they're Maya. It's illusion. Because there is variety in Brahman. But their point is, I am Brahman. And if I get to that platform, all problems go away. They don't realize that, yes, all problems here go away, but there's also Brahman as a positive side. They don't know. So they're innocent. So the jiva is always, so that is our position. So when we are in the fire of serving the internal potency, that also stops all problems of thinking that we'll be the big, big devotee, because the big, big devotee is internal potency. Right? Means, you know, Radharani, Mother Yashoda, you know, Subal, Sridhar, you know, they are all internal potency. We serve them, so we're in the fire of their devotion. So therefore, our devotion becomes non-different. But there's that difference is there. At the same time, there's a non-difference. Because if there's not a difference, where's pastime? Same time, if there's not a non-difference in mood, where's the commonality to create relationship? Yeah, individuality is also different. Yeah. Does that make some sense? So that's there. If that's understood, then it makes it very easy for us. We just accept that. So that's why it doesn't matter what the conditioned nature is. Just as the jiva is engaged in the internal potency, it becomes as good as fire. Therefore, the conditioned nature, whatever it is, engaged in Krishna's service, becomes as good as fire. That's why it's not a big thing to try to, all this positioning and social thing to create, you know, who's better and worse. It's not important. You just take whatever it is, engage in Krishna's service, and it'll naturally come to its own level, right? Like that, it'll naturally. So if you're a big man, you'll become a big man. If you're small, then you'll stay one. You know? And if you're just happy, then you'll be happy. Better be happier and satisfied as a small manager and everybody else is satisfied and they can depend upon you and there's better interaction than you trying to be the big, big manager and everybody's unsatisfied, including yourself. But if you're a big, big manager, then it'll naturally happen. Just do it. Don't try to be the small, small manager out of false humility. So it's just whatever it is, you just do that. That makes sense. So that's the iron and fire principle that connects to everything. You know? Like that. Okay, so we'll end here, and then if anybody wants to continue with any questions, we'll continue after. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Dainatai Gaura Pedra. So therefore, then you know Krishna tattva, you know jiva tattva, you know the shakti tattva, you know the material energy, you know all these different things. So you know who, what they are exactly, and how they relate to each other. Jiva and material energy, jiva internal potency, jiva Krishna, Krishna internal potency, jiva Krishna, think like this, you know, internal potency, external potency, like that. So that's tattva. Tattva then explains exactly, defines exactly what each one is, what their interaction is, what result you'll get from any interaction, what's the process of that interaction. Yeah. And so it's the position, the reality of that particular area. So that's why it's sambandha gyan, relationship. Until you know that, you don't know the relationship. You know, it's just like it's a common thing. It's that you meet somebody, you don't know them. The first thing you try to do is find out knowledge about them. because then you know how to interact. One, you'll just be pleasant, or you'll act whatever is your natural platform of interaction. But you'll just interact, but you try to find out, what do they do, what is their occupation, you know, where do they live, what's their position in society, then you understand how they compare to you, then you know how to relate. It's just like that. It's just like even in just, you're not trying to say, oh, how are you, you know, where are you from, what are you doing? You know, all these things, these are all you're trying to find out knowledge so you can establish a relationship. Do we establish with everyone, even people we don't like? Yes, but still you have to know about everyone. If you don't like somebody, you have to have some knowledge about them to not like. Yes, means you have to know yourself, because otherwise, why is it something you don't like? You don't like something that is against something that you do like. You don't just not like something just to not like. There's something in there somewhere. Yeah. So in the material world, you always have duality of like and dislike. But the thing is to connect it to Krishna. When it's connected to Krishna, then it doesn't matter. Then it becomes purified. Because then a lot of things you don't like, you can live with if they're connected to Krishna. Because for a higher purpose, see, the thing is energy is connected to energetic. And energy will do anything for energetic if attachment is there. So something you don't like, if you connect it to Krishna, then you can even deal with it if it pleases Krishna. Yeah, pravriti, nivriti, either. Means this, in other words, the point is that we're going to accept something we don't like or reject something we do like only to please somebody. You know, we've accepted and rejected it to please ourselves, but now it's being brought into question. Something we like, we need to reject. Something we don't like, we need to accept. So we're only really going to do that out of a higher affection. So either a higher affection for ourselves that we see all benefits so much, so therefore I'll do it, or that it's going to please Krishna, Guru Krishna, and the Vaishnavas, therefore I'll do it. So that's the point. It's the internal principle, is that the Shakti always is trying to please who they're connected to. Because energy means it has to be connected to something. A generator can generate electricity or not. The generator exists. But the energy only exists if the generator is generating it. You can't have energy just sitting there doing nothing. It doesn't exist then. Oh yeah, no need to separately endeavor for anything else other than pleasing Krishna. Yeah, if you're connected to the energetic, so if you see that, okay, health's not good, I should do something good for that, then you're doing that simply to please Krishna. But if it's like your health is the most important thing, and you gotta do that, then you get into these things. It's okay, because, you know, indirectly it's for pleasing Krishna. But not directly, so you're not going to get satisfaction from it. But if the consideration is simply to please Krishna, therefore we're doing it, then you'll do it how much needs to be done, and when it doesn't need to be done anymore, it won't be done. It won't become a thing that you have to do. It won't become an identity. This is the difference. Is don't allow one's endeavors to become one's identity. Yeah, if you identify with it, then your problems come. Because as soon as there's an identity other than serving Krishna, then there's all rules of good and bad that go with it. And if you're not falling perfectly, you won't get anyway. Even if the whole rest of the universe follows everything perfectly, if you don't, you will not get the results. You know, there's this idea, if everybody was nice, I would be happy. No, it has nothing to do with it. Others are nice or not, it has nothing to do with if you're going to be happy or not. You're going to be happy when you reap the results of good activity that will make you happy. Why do people worship the demigods?
To get anything from any of those powers.
Yeah, it means it comes from Krishna, but the problem is there's surrender. You can go to the demigod, perform the particular activity that is required by that demigod, and get that material result. And one only has to temporarily surrender that long to get it. If you want to keep it, of course, you have to keep it up, but most people. Happiness means gaining it. Once they gain it, they consider they're happy. They don't realize that happiness is something that has to be constantly cultivated if you want it. Because if I get this, I'll be happy. That means between now and me getting it, I'm not happy. And I got it, that moment I got it, I'm happy. But the second moment after I got it, I'm again not happy. Yeah. So people not being so smart, then therefore they approach the demigods because they'll get results quickly and seemingly easily because they just have to do this ritual. While to get it through Krishna, then one has to surrender and take shelter of Krishna. But it's actually more efficient. You know, but it's sincerity. So if one is sincere and one approaches Krishna, one will get the result even easier than going to the demigod. But then one if takes Krishna for granted and insincerely approaches, I want this and that, then you won't get it. So even to go to Krishna as a supporter supplier, you still have to be sincere and surrendered. You know, so by doing that, after a while, one will keep that and will give up asking for all those things. So if you are going to ask, the better you go to him than the demigods. Krishna is very tricky. Because he can afford to be, because he's beyond everything. He is different. So no one knows Krishna. Otherwise, why is Krishna ever fresh, even to Radharani? Because you can't know him. There's always something new. And even his energy connected to him, because he's eternally producing the energy, it's also ever fresh, because there's more energy always coming. Therefore, Radharani is always ever fresh. So if you connect yourself to Radha and Krishna, then one will also be ever fresh. Religion, inherent nature, they're all synonymous. Like that.
The processes that you're asking about, what have to follow, special health procedures.
Does, but now in doing it, it's not a, so you have two things. You have the situation and you have the activity. You know, it's just like you have intransitive and transitive verbs, right? Intransitive simply means what is the situation? It exists. Transitive means that something is going on. There's an interaction between subject and object, like that. In intransitive, there's no interaction. He is floating in the river. So he is in the existence of floating. You're just stating his position. So it's important that actually duty means action. There's no such thing as inaction. Inaction means you're not interacting with the material energy for a material benefit. That's actual inaction. This idea I do nothing is not actually inaction, because something's going on anyway. You're still breathing, you're still doing something to maintain your body, like that. So it's very important that devotees understand this and take their position of religion or dharma from the intransitive to the transitive. You know, and we'll take the example that you gave. I am married. It's not so great that I'll do this yajna. Okay, but doing this yajna is, I am in the position of marriage. But now, what is the actual activity of the marriage? That's the point. So if you actually check, the reason that it's not so great is the activities of the marriage aren't actually going on, or they're not going on properly. That creates the dissatisfactory position. So it's okay as you take it as the tattva, okay, I'm in the position, I'm married, therefore I should, you know, keep at it. That's the proper thing to do, that's what Prabhupada would want. That's what the scriptures, you know, say. But now, how to make it work? You know, what is it? What are the duties? What would be my duties in here? Like it or not, just what is it that makes it work? Because the point is, taking marriage, when you have a relationship, that means each person is going to the other for something. Each person is dependent upon the other for something. So that means something they have, and that what they have can be given. And what they don't have then can be taken and given by the other person. So that means every relationship has something that they have. Just like a teacher has knowledge, the student has the desire for the knowledge and the capacity for knowledge. So that desire to learn and the teacher teaching, by those activities on both sides, knowledge is transferred. But if it's just, okay, he's the teacher and the student, I gotta live with it, then no knowledge is transferred. One has to have the desire to know, and one has to have the knowledge and the desire to give. Then when those two come together, it works.
Yeah, the satisfaction. So then the husband has something in the relationship that he has that is his strength that he can give to the wife. And the wife has something that she can give to the husband. So if that is understood, that's part of the relationship. Giving and taking is not the only thing. It's giving and taking. How much you give, that much you take. So if not much is being, if not much is coming in, that means maybe we're not giving. Even if we're giving, maybe we're doing the form of it, but is the mentality there? If the form of it means externally we've done the activity, so the activity itself physically is transitive, but our mentality may be intransitive in it. So still, we're just existing while we're performing our duties rather than we're actually performing the mentality. Does that make some sense? So if that's done, one will find it doesn't matter how, where relationship is, it can always be kick-started into something that's pleasant. It doesn't matter, because the point is people are looking for that interaction. If it's happening here, why don't you go somewhere else? You know, like that. So it's just a matter of that feeling. So if those needs are there, don't bother with it. That's the meaning of vanaprastha. The needs aren't there, so just basic elements to maintain companionship, that's all that's there. Because everything else has been already burnt out. You know, through knowledge it's been burnt, so it doesn't exist. But if it exists, then it should be dealt with. It should be dealt with in connection to Krishna. Otherwise it will not be burnt out. That's the whole thing. So it doesn't matter, and it doesn't matter who it is, where it is, like that. Just if it's more ideal connection, then it will be easier to make it work. It will more naturally work. But one can always endeavor and work hard to make it work anyway. You know, like that. Of course, we don't over-endeavor. If the other person's not reciprocating, that's another thing. But if both parties try, it'll work. The thing is, we'll do something, an activity is done with the expectation of some return. We don't get the return, we become frustrated. Yeah, it's fruitive. But everything's fruitive. Now it's just a matter of whether you're connecting that fruitive to Krishna through performance, proper performance of prescribed duties to please Krishna. Then even that fruitive element is being done for Krishna. So you're trying to please Krishna, so you want to get the good result for Krishna. It's like this. I'm going out, I have a job, I get money. I'm doing that to get the money for myself. Or I have a job because I want to get money to give to Krishna. Right? So then that fruit of result is not fruitive because it's the result's been given to Krishna. So it doesn't matter then. It's not a problem. Because without result, there's no action, because every action gives a result. Right? It means the subject will perform an activity on an object, which will then give a result. Satisfaction of connecting or not? Yes, can be. But you have to see that you have to know that it's connected to Krishna. The satisfaction will be there. The Vaishnava is being satisfied. Scripture. You know, scripture is satisfied. Guru Sadhu Shastra is satisfied. And we are satisfied. If all that's there, then you know things are going well. If not, then something's wrong. It's not quite. One has to look at it and work on it. If we can get ourselves to be satisfied, everyone else will be satisfied. It's a very important thing. If we find, you know, you have bad relations with everybody, we'll figure it's everybody else. But those same people have good relations with other people also. So the reason we have bad relations with other people is because we don't have good relations with ourselves. We ourselves are not comfortable with ourselves. So if we're not comfortable with ourselves, nobody's going to be comfortable with ourselves. You know? So that's the principle. So to that degree you're comfortable, others will be comfortable. You know, I've seen it. I've seen people, they don't care how they dress. And nobody says anything about it because they're comfortable. Other people don't dress properly and everybody criticizes them because they're not comfortable with how they dress. But someone who dressing nicely doesn't matter to them. No one even makes a comment. And even if they do, it's laughing. Oh yeah, they just like that. Yes, it's not a criticism. It's just because they're comfortable. They don't care. Yeah, it means you get to the Vasudeva, but you have to go beyond Vasudeva, because Vasudeva is still one of the four false egos. Because that's I'm the controller and enjoyer. When that manifests as a specific method of controlling and enjoying, that's Sankarshan. That's the gross material identity. That you're attracted to enjoy through a particular method or item of material energy. That's Prajumna, because you're attracted to it. Prajumna is Cupid. And what you expect to get from it, the result of the happiness you'll get, or the experience of the happiness when you get it, of controlling and enjoying material, that's Aniruddha, is the mind. Like that. So these are the four elements of the false ego. We're always in all of them. One may be more prominent. It means the fundamental, the Vasudeva, the polluted consciousness, that's consistent. And that you generally, by your devotional razor, if that is dropped or not.
Is it possible for an egoistic philosophy to get
to anywhere to just have to add Krishna? Yes, that's all. You add Krishna because the first thing is identifying that as Krishna. Krishna is the material elements that we identify. He is this material body. He is the concept of maleness. He is the concept of, you know, a house or a car. Vehicles are his concept. Home is his concept. So that we have this car, this vehicle. Money is his concept. So we have this money. You know, power is his concept. We have that. Beauty is his concept. We have that. Knowledge or renunciation, we have that. So therefore, it's all him anyway. So everything that we would identify, it's already him. The element is him. So that's Sankarshan. So as soon as we connect it to Krishna, then it goes away, it evaporates. That we're attracted to this or attracted to that, it's dead matter. The only reason it's attracted is because Krishna's in it through the universal form. And Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is Cupid. So that's why the material energy, the universal form, makes everything look nice. So we're actually attracted to Krishna. All those other things, a position of Sankarshan, those are already Krishna's concepts as Krishna. Right? Then what we think we're going to get from it, the result, that's also Krishna. Because it's only because we've conceived it will make us happy. Yeah, so it's Krishna. And the Vasudeva is I'm the controller and enjoyer, that's purified by I'm the servant, Krishna is the Lord, He's the master, I am the servant. My business is pleasing Him, you know. Developing love for Him as the perfection of my life. That purifies that false ego. So if one is aware of how these egos function, then there is no material existence. Because we come into here, we come into this universe because of Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha aspects. That's what we're dealing with. But that's there because the Vasudeva, because we originally come to the material world because we want to control and enjoy. So therefore we're here. So you get rid of that, the others go away. You change that one, you change all the others. If that one you can't change, then mechanically work on the others. understand that whatever I have is Krishna. That's why you see. You know, it's whatever I have, whatever knowledge I have, that's all you in these songs. Or, you're the mother, you're the father, you're the life and soul. Whatever it is that is here that is important to me, it's all Krishna anyway. But I falsely identify that it's not. Right? The principle of motherhood is there, and it acts in a certain way. The flavor of it is the same. The kid living in the street under a tarpaulin in Calcutta, and the kid in a very nice family or a wealthy family or, you know, any part of the world, the flavor they get in proper interaction between them and their mother is exactly the same. It's not different. It's not that it's special to you because that's the door through which it comes. But the principle of the motherhood is the same. It doesn't matter. You can come through unlimited doors, but it's coming to you through this one. You call this one mother. So that is Krishna. That flavor, that taste you get of being with the mother, and that support, the nourishment and everything, you get that is Krishna. But we identify it with that body that we call mother, or at best with that soul. Yeah, but according to their desire. Because if they're human, then they'll do it according to how Krishna wants. If they're not human, then there's all, like you see, a cow, doesn't matter what happens, it feeds milk to the calf. A dog feeds milk to the puppy as long as it doesn't see something to eat. All the puppies can be drinking milk and the mother sees something interesting, and that just gets up and without even looking, doesn't even give them a lick, the mat, get up slowly, as if they don't exist, gets up, walk off. I've seen plenty of dog mothers on two legs. Yeah, so just because they're a mother, yes, because they've had a child, they will be a mother. But what species, that's up for discussion. Human, that's another thing. Human means according to Shastra. Not according to Shastra, that means one of the 8 million species of life. You know, and some of them are good mothers, some of them not so good. You know, like that. Foxes are pretty good. Like that, they're a little better. Dogs are a little better. Tigresses are fairly good. Elephants are quite good. You know, so each one has its different thing. Yeah, so that's all. So motherhood will be there. Everybody is experiencing, but through a different door and a different flavor. So the strongest, the most fullest manifestation of motherhood is according to Shastra. Anything other than that will be less. Because otherwise, how will it come through perfectly? So if a mother, even if she doesn't know Shastra, is doing it, it's from karma that she will do that. So she does take care and interact and do all the right things so the child feels completely sheltered and taken care of. Then it's there. But complete means intellectual, emotional, physical, sensual, their identity, social. Yes, whatever it is, whatever she has to be able to give that. I have seen mothers that physically take care of the kid very nicely, but intellectually or socially, then it's got nothing to do with the kid. It's going to be the way they want it, and the kid doesn't factor into it. And it's okay if the kid is of such similar nature that it matches. But if it doesn't, then it's there. Because nowadays, especially if one keeps to one's own community, then there's a good chance it'll be the same. You know, like, you know, someone coming from a traditional business family generally has that same mentality. So the same values works for them. But when you have marriages where they're coming from different backgrounds, sometimes it matches, sometimes it doesn't. And even then, if they're not careful in their focus, even within that, it may not be. You know, so many times we have, the parents are all, you know, academics and intellectuals, and the kid is not interested at all. You know, they're into some, you know, shooter art, you know, some craft. You know, or the opposite, you have a parent, some parents where they're just simple, simple people, but the kid goes on to become a doctor, a lawyer. You know, so you do have that, because the mentality wasn't quite matched, so the kid is different. So that's not a problem. It's just a matter of allowing. So it has to be complete. Is that if the affection is enough, then you give them their space. But you see that their space is protected. Yeah, control and enjoy. Because they see control and joy, and they'll learn that. So therefore, to that degree and intensity that their parents are controllers and enjoyers, the child will be the same. There will be no difference. The difference may be in their methods of where the field of control and enjoyment may be different. You know, the parents are into more conservative, the child's into more liberal, like that. But that degree of control and enjoyment, that would be the same. There won't be any difference. And basically the principles at which they base it will be the same also. You know, like the parent has decided, I'm going to do what I want to do, but what I want to do is conservative. And they can't understand why their child is so independent and just wants to do what they want to do. Right? Because they're the same. Just what they've decided to do it in is something different. But they're exactly the same. Like that. But it looks different. Because they weren't able to... The identity wasn't strong enough. The child didn't feel that, so they didn't identify, so therefore the things didn't get across. The value system didn't go across. When does he start showing his own... Means own space, meaning here, meaning the pursuit of their own needs, their own desires, their own inclinations. That doesn't mean if their inclinations are wrong that they're allowed. But if they're bona fide, though different, that should be cultivated. But if they're wrong, you know, according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and, you know, like that, but those aren't allowed, even if, I think, because that's just impure. But if, you know, it's their field is different, then that can be accommodated. But then they have to be good at it. You know, to that degree that the parents are expert in their field, the child should be expert in that field. So there's no laziness allowed. You want to do it, then do it fully. You know, if they want to, whatever they want to do, do it completely. That's our method. Prabhupada mentions that, is that whatever you're going to do, do it properly. Don't half do it. Better to not do it than half do it. Because if you're half doing it, means you're half doing something else also. Right? Because the time that you would take to do that, you won't, you know, so it's not complete. So better to do it completely. Well, 16, that's another thing. 16 is when they are adults, so they think like adults, but depending upon what is the position in that, then training keeps going. You know, can go up to, depending on how much they can handle, up to 24. 16, they think like an adult. They already have an identity, they already have a skill and all that, then they can pull out then and refine it, you know, and develop it. If they don't, then that still has to be created for them. Because the identity from 16 to 18 is where it's being the most established. If it's already established before, then that's very easy. If not, then that time is very confusing for them. 19 to 21 is where, is where they develop their any new skills, but more detailed skill. You know, in other words, what you can gain from 13 to 15, that, or from 8 to 10, you can gain again there. Yeah, varnas are different, but that's if the varnas are working so efficiently that it's there. It's that Abhimanyu, his mother, is a Kshatriya. Right? She's being attacked by a Brahmastra. There's no weapon more powerful than a Brahmastra. She's not freaking out. She's not falling on the ground. She's not going unconscious. She's not yelling and screaming. She's just walking up to Krishna and saying, protect me. Because, and why? Not protect me, it's because I'm the one carrying the last of the Pandavas. This child is killed, there is no more dynasty. Right? So as a mother, as a member of the community, as a Kshatriya, therefore the woman needs to be protected. As she's coming up and saying nice, lucid prayers, it's not, you know, just, like that. You know, we don't see any ahs in her prayers. That's a Kshatriya. Arjuna is the father. No, Arjuna's the father. No, Uttara. Yeah. Huh? Abhimanyu's the father. Yeah, we're thinking of Purikit now. So then Abhimanyu's father. And Abhimanyu is then son of Subhadra. Yeah. She's also pure. He's pure. He can't get, I mean, they're like the epitome of that. So the kids are like that. So right from the beginning, they show those nature. So if the kid hasn't shown the nature, it's not clear, then generally it has to be clarified from 16 to 18 that time. So probably I would recommend that they, you know, 16 is the earliest you can pull out, but modern, you know, is you got the legal statute, so 18, and generally everything's 2 years behind in mentality, though the modes will kick in at those times. So at 18, 16, 18, they can finish studies. But if they want to go on for higher and more things like that, then there are advantages to pass that. So 19 to 21, they get in all finer skills in philosophy and all these like metaphysical, intellectual, finer things can go in at that time easily. There's no ego at that time if you're dealing properly. At 22, then that closes and the ego comes up. Then it's a matter of what they gain, teaching them how to use that in the right mentality. Like that. Then, so that's 22 to 24. So 25, then they graduate. If you want to. Otherwise, if not, you just have to, those things have to be dealt with. The school is geared to deal with them, but if not, if the community knows, then they deal with it. Like the Kshatriya, he's learned whatever he's going to learn in the school, and at 16, then he moves back into the palace. But then he's under the guidance. He lives with the Rajguru, with the Guru. And then he teaches him under all the ministers and the generals how to manage the kingdom. So still, then he's creating that identity from 16 to 18. He's giving those further, finer skills. And he's seeing that his ego is in check and doesn't get out of hand. So they're still going to train them all the way through to 25. Though he's a married man and he's this and that. He may be crowned, he may be the crown prince, he may be the king. But in either case, the Rajguru is going to direct. So it's just a matter of what is better for the situation. But Brahmanas generally stay. No, Brahmanas generally stay. Brahmanas would generally, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas traditionally, they would leave at 16. Unless they wanted to go for higher studies, then they could stay through. But generally they would leave at that point, because you've studied one Veda. And the thing is that the Brahman could graduate at that if he wanted, though generally it was recommended they went for 2, not 3 Vedas. Like that. So it's more common that Brahmins would always generally stay through. It wasn't uncommon for them to stay through because they don't have to get married either. So it's not uncommon they stay through and become Naistika or stay through and get married later. Like that. Because the body doesn't mature really until 25. So that's when the boy's the strongest, so you're more guaranteed to get a son. Kshatriyas are powerful, so even at 16 they may get a son. But others it's not recommended. So whatever, so like that, then they have that knowledge. Because the point is he's going to marry a Brahmani. So unless he has knowledge, how is she going to respect? Unless he has self and sense control, how is she respect? Because that's what she's going to look for, that sense control, that spiritual power, the knowledge, that steadiness in sadhana, that spiritual vision. That's what's going to attract the Brahmin woman. Then she'll respect and serve that man. Yeah, she'll have seen her father, so therefore then she looks for that in the husband. Right? So the same way. Well, the Kshatriya woman is looking for that prowess, that power, that control, you know, that chivalry. You know, it's like that story of the king went to battle. He lost, he came back. And then the doorman came to the inner part of the palace and says, "The king has come." And she asked, "Did you win the battle?" Because she didn't hear if he had won the battle, there would have been so much arrangements of people eulogizing, a big festival. There wasn't one. That means he didn't win. He just escaped and came back. So that the doorman is coming and saying, "The king is here." No, it should be the king was arriving in the court, and she would go to the court and then bow and see the king for the first time. Then, after doing all the formalities, then he would go to the inner palace, be announced, and then she would receive him. Nothing. Just he came and said, "The king is here." And she said, "Did he win the battle or did he lose? Did he win the battle?" And she said, "If he won the battle, then it's the king. If he didn't win the battle, it's not the king. He's not my, that's not my husband." So then hearing that, then he immediately went back to the battlefield and then defeated the enemy. Because her thing is, for a Kshatriya, there's no question to be married to a coward. He either comes back alive, oh, that was the thing, yeah. He came back from the battlefield. He either comes back victorious or he comes back dead. That's my husband. My husband wouldn't come back from the battlefield having lost and be alive. Because the point is that she has to dedicate her life to this man after his death. Who's going to dedicate to the coward? So I was saying, you're talking about very strong emotional things here. And they only come according to Shastra. So you can see these moves are only coming according to Shastra. They don't come by something else. You want to take sexual romantic feelings, okay, you get a man and woman that kind of got similar nature, and you only get paid work. But for how long? And how long much can you be romantic? You know, how romantic can you... Can you hand me the, you know, can opener? No.
Oh, hand me the can opener.
Oh yes, you know, here's the can. Give me a break. You know, it's like it's very limited. So if you want to keep any depth of relationship, then it has to be according to Shastra. And unfortunately, devotees have a bad opinion about Shastra. They say it doesn't work, and they think they know better by the Malechya Yava methods. I have yet to see very many families that I would consider are real families, and that the taste that they're getting is actually conjugal. And they could say, "Well, we don't care," but I see these same people who say don't care. They're sometimes the driest, most shriveled up people that I know. Completely weird, and their kids go weird. So say what they like, but in the bottom of their heart, they're wanting a very nice interaction in their family. That's why you have some taste of family life still in the Latin culture. Because there are duties. They may be, you know, arbitrary, but they're duties. You know, you don't speak bad about your mother. You don't say this and that. You know, to a gringo, say what you like about his mother. He may get upset or he may not. But you can't tell a Latin anything about his mother. You want to start a fight, just make a comment about his father. That's all. And it doesn't matter how big and tough the guy is. He could be the biggest Buddha on the block. People tremble when they hear his name. But when his mom comes in and she starts yelling and screaming, he just says, yes, mother. She wants to slap him around, she can slap him around. Doesn't matter. She's the mother. You know, he may not like it, but she's not. So therefore, they still get the taste of that relationship. And the white men lost it. Those who still follow some old culture, they have it to some degree, to that degree they follow. Otherwise, it's an emotional vacuum. And the worst thing is they're proud of it. You know, like the pauper is proud of his penny, the malechas and the yavas are proud of having no culture. So do what you want, you can't teach them.
Challenge,
yeah, because they think they know better. They think they know better. And if you look at them, I don't see any hardly know better. The only people that I know that have good families are people that actually follow traditions, either Vedic or old school Western. Other than that, I don't see. I have not seen. You know, individuals may follow nicely and the other party doesn't. What can you do? Families break up. Because it takes both to make it work. But otherwise, it won't work. It's an illusion that they're going to find it somewhere else. You know? Devotees will sit down and read. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. They'll have classes on it. They'll discuss it, that. But they will not sit and discuss, study Bhagavatam. They will not study Dharma Shastra. That's a malecha and yavana mentality. Because they don't have faith in Shastra. Don't have faith. You know, I guarantee we can go into so many houses here, we'll find tons of self-help books by karmis. And for those same topics that are right there in the Vedic literatures, very few are looking there. Very few. Guaranteed. Because it's just no faith. So that's the position. So the point is that without faith, how are we going to get Krishna? So you have to have some faith in something. So they have faith. Okay, they have faith in this car. Good, at least they have faith. And they're trying. Okay, that's good. Then try fully. If they're going to read it, do it. Do all the things that he says. But it won't address the spiritual needs, the spiritual interaction. Therefore, there's a problem. So where are they going to get that? They have to get that from the Shastra. Have to. Then, in getting it, then you have to understand it according, as Mataji mentioned, according to how it's given to us by our acharyas. Because they're giving how to follow the process that you get the result of going to Vrajavandava. You want to get to Vaikuntha, you want to get to the heavenly planets, you want to get, you know, like that, then you follow different aspects of the same path. You know, it's just like you're going shopping, you go down the aisle. It's the same aisle that everyone goes down, but you want potatoes, you take potatoes, someone else wants carrot, you take that, someone else wants soap, you take that. Because you have a different purpose. But it's the same aisle. So the same thing is the same process is there. It's just what you take from the process, then you call that process. You know, just like you take, potato, cauliflower, peas, cheese, then you call it a cauliflower and cheese subject. You know, but if we take, you know, if you leave out the cheese, you call it a cauliflower subject. You know, you leave out the cauliflower, potato subject. So it just means, depending on what's there, it gets a name. But it's still the same process. Because how you'll cook any of those subjects will be the same principle. But because you want a slightly different result, then the elements you use and the way you'll deal with the elements may be different. So you get a different result. But the method of cooking means the principle of cooking, applying heat to the objects, that's the same. practices. So like that. So the whole idea of the scriptures is trying to teach one these four levels of realizing Brahman. So the first is how to perform your duties properly in connection to Krishna. That's the first level. But that level works nicely if basically you are born into a family or a situation in which the parents in the community already follow that. Then you start there. So the normal thing is the brahmacharya kids, you just teach them duty, what's right, and this and that. You do that anyway. But then they get up. But then if you're dealing with adults, then the first thing you have to do is actually you have to go to the third level. You have to teach them some mandagadeya prayoja, who is God, who is the soul, what's the eternal world. Because they don't know what's duty. Because duty to them means doing what I want for my own purpose. I may identify with a particular community, therefore their traditions I follow because I want to be part of that community. But it still comes back to me. And as soon as I don't identify with that community, I don't follow those traditions. So then you have to start with your identity is certain with God and all that. Then that's there, then you cultivate the devotional processes on that level. Then with time, as they become purified and they don't identify anymore with the Malechan Yavana method, then you can start to introduce the first two levels. And by dealing with the third, it's so powerful that you can completely free yourself from the material energy and go back to Godhead. There's no need to do well on the first two levels. You don't have to. But the tendency is that you're going to emotionally and socially be dissatisfied if you had any amount of desire that couldn't be dealt with just by intellectualizing them and having them go away. If you have to experience them, then you'll have a problem. Because unless you come from a family and an experience where they knew how to emotionally and socially deal with each other, that the members of the family were satisfied, where are you going to get the idea from how to do it? You won't know. So the heart has to be purified so that you can accept the God-given duties so that you will then interact in that way and experience those emotional and sensual and intellectual needs that you're looking for. You know, you have that identity, you have all these things, so like that. Because I see myself, devotees and that, and the soul, social things, that's there. It's only that, those things. It's not other things. Because that's the way it's created. There's only so many things that are there. You know, you only have 5 knowledge acquiring senses and 5, you know, the working senses. So whatever you do has to come through those. You know, and the intellect can only break things down and put things together. Right? And the mind can only accept and reject. Right? And the ego simply gives us our feeling of confidence or lack of it. So that's all you're dealing with. You're not dealing with more than that. So whichever ones of those are important for you, that's what has to be addressed. So the whole social structure of Varnashram is so that all of those are addressed, but at the same time they're addressed so that they perfectly match the process and the philosophy so that everything is perfectly engaged. Because you can take anything, take any sense and take it back through. Right? You have the nose. Okay, so the nose then smells. Right? The smell then comes comes from earth. Right? So then all those things, then they connect back. And the earth is going from these modes. And so that comes out of that mode. So that means ultimately it's under the ego. It's the ego, the intelligence of the mind that is more connected with that. right? And then those emotions, and then those, and you connect it back to the Samandabhide and the Goja. So if there's something wrong in that mode, there's something wrong in your samanda, or in your abhideya, or your vayojana. Yeah, so you can take anything and connect it back. So it's not a problem that, this doesn't apply in Krishna consciousness. Everything applies. You know, you like very soft, smooth sheets. It applies because that is skin. You know. So skin is air. You know. Air of your goodness, you know, so it's just these things come like that. So everything can be connected, so it doesn't matter. So that's the thing, is that the Vedic is so perfect that it all connects. Yeah, through knowledge. Otherwise, why are there nice bed sheets? Why satin bed sheets? Because there's, well, they feel nice, that makes it feel why. So what? Why is it important for you to feel good? Explain that. You know, the thing is, but what about me? What's so important about you that anybody should care anyway? You have to explain to us why you are important that we should even consider. You know, this whole thing that this thing, you know, of me and the individual is the most important, and you know, everyone's got to get in cooperate. Why do they have to cooperate? Who said? Right? The Romans were very happy. They just went out, you know, pillaged and burnt and this and took over, and they were very happy. So, I mean, why is that you have to cooperate? Since when? You have to be nice. You know, nice guys finish last. So, I mean, what is this thing? You got to be nice, you got to be good what? Who said? So the point is if it's not connected to Shastra, everything can be argued. It's arbitrary. It's subjective. It's self-centered. You've decided being good is important, therefore it's good. The whole world has to be good. So what? Who cares if you feel the whole world's got to be good? Who cares? Who are you that anybody should even care what you think? Right? The bottom line is that nobody matters. The only reason they matter is because they're connected to Krishna. Because Krishna is important. So therefore, everybody's important. Therefore, you're nice to others. Therefore, you're good. Therefore, you're non-violent. Therefore, you're caring. Therefore, you're considerate. Only because of that. You take Krishna out of it, who cares? It doesn't matter. Who's going to stop you? Yeah, it just doesn't matter. Who's going to stop you? You don't like it, so what? What do we care? You know? It doesn't matter. If we're going to be self-centered, then what does it matter? It's not good to be self-centered. Who said? Who said? Religion says. Modern culture doesn't say. Religion said. Economics picked up on it. Because economics is upadharma. Religion is dharma. It's an upadharma. So they figured out it's better economics if people are nice with each other. We make more money. And what you make, you keep, because they don't steal it from you. Okay. So at least for that reason, that they'll maintain. But anything of any good, any platitude, comes from religion. Now it's just a question of what religion you want to follow. Western religion, non-Vedic religions, or Vedic. And in Vedic, you want to follow according to what Prabhupada says, or our own interpretation. So then that way it's introduced. First we establish the Krishna consciousness, the sadhana, you know, the devotional attitude and all that. Then you can address social needs. Anyone who tries to address social needs without doing it that way will fail. Guaranteed. You can write it in your book. Like that. I myself have seen so many committees and so many meetings, and I have yet to see anything come out of any one of them. Nothing. Zero. Why? Because there's no Krishna in front. He's the one. So unless it's based on Krishna consciousness, there's no question that the lechas and the avanas will create any social structure. can't, because they don't know what social structure is. Not possible, impossible. So unless it's based on Krishna consciousness, you can't do anything. So then you can add in the Dharma Shastra, Artha Shastra, like this. Then it will work. But unless the Krishna consciousness is there, the other, they can't work. Because they're lower levels of Brahman. And those lower levels come from the basis of something you work with. To perform prescribed duties, you first have to have the concept that prescribed duties are important. And how many religions and yamanas prescribed duties are important? If they're old school to some degree, it's there, but if push comes to shove, they can be dropped. Most won't, but new school, you know, hey, whatever number one's into, then that's what happens. You know, duty is a bad word. Just like you're saying, in your culture, then I don't care is a bad word. In the white man's culture, duty is considered the worst word you can come up with socially. Most restrictive, most is, so that's the problem. Bhagavad Gita is already starting off the discussions on what's actual duty. What is prescribed duty? What is real prescribed duty? But that's the ABCs of spiritual life. So if you don't accept that duty is important, how do we even start talking? Therefore, Brahman starts from Tapto Brahma Jigyasa. You can inquire about Brahman. So what is it? Arjuna asks, how does the person walk? How does he sit? How does he stand? How does he talk? That's duties. So Krishna then immediately goes to that, that third level. He doesn't discuss it on the first level. That's discussing Dharma Shastra. And then they'll end the meeting, he discusses the second level. Yeah. That's the point. So, it's a process, it's a science. You cannot get away from the science. People can, just because they feel they can and a bunch of people get together, Prabhupada says, 1,000 fools can say a falsehood is truth, but it's still falsehood. It doesn't matter. That's the thing. The conditioned soul is so proud, he thinks that his opinion matters on its own. Because I thought it, it's important. Because I said it, it must be done. Because I endeavored, the result is mine. You know? So, where's the nice karma? The person collects so much money for a temple. Then they start complaining that they have no control over how it's spent. They didn't get any facility from it. You know, I don't like these leaders. They don't support me. I'm not getting respected. You know, they're eating in that because of me. So this is just a fruit of mentality. They started off in pure mentality, but with time, because they don't know how to address the material needs, they ignore them, then they swallow them like a tiger. And then what they say is more gross than the karmas. So then I've heard tons of people say this. Just like that. What did I get? What's in it for me? All these years I worked for everybody else. What about me? Who is this me? Me what? Me, my nose, me, my ear, me, my genital, me, my brain. What me? What does this mean? You know, so they don't see the connection between the philosophy and the culture. And because of that, so many devotees leave or do weird things. You see, philosophy, they don't understand it applies to culture. So as long as they're Krishna conscious, fired up, and they have faith, it works. But as soon as that faith gets them, then they have nothing to fall back on. Prabhupada was talking about one devotee, very young, one that takes sannyas, Indian. I think it was Bhakti Truma, actually. So the senior sannyasi was saying, he's so young and he's so new, you know, we don't know if he's strong enough and he'll be able to maintain the sannyas vows, and, you know, he may fall down and all that. And Prabhupada looked at him and says, yes, if he falls down, he'll fall down into the mode of goodness. Like that. So everyone had to shut up. Because he came from a cultured, dignified, decent human background. So even if he, you know, goes off the rails, he'll still be human. You know, he's not going to be out there, you know, snorting and shooting whatever he gets his hands on. Like, you know, it's different. So therefore, you know, it's different. So that is the point. Therefore, he can do the things that he can do. It's a different platform. Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhagavatam ki, Chaitanya Gaurav ki.